Boeing was warned about the 787's batteries. The LSA storm is coming to America. And the FCC looks again at phasing out 121.5 megahertz ELTs. This is Aero News for Friday, January 18, 2013. I'm Glenn Moyer. As the U.S. and Japanese fleet of 787 Dreamliners continues to sit on the ground while investigators probe two recent overheating battery incidents, Boeing Chairman, President, and CEO Jim McNerney issued a statement saying the company deeply regrets the impact on its customers and their passengers. The statement reads in part, quote, "The safety of passengers and crew members who fly aboard Boeing airplanes is our highest priority. Boeing is committed to supporting the FAA and finding answers as quickly as possible. We are confident the 787 is safe, and we stand behind its overall integrity. We will be taking every necessary step in the coming days to assure our customers and the traveling public of the 787's safety and to return the airplanes to service." Meanwhile, quoting sources that would speak only on the condition of anonymity, the Seattle Times is reporting that hot chemicals sprayed out of the battery on the 787 Dreamliner that made an emergency landing in Japan on Wednesday. The result was a gooey, dark residue left behind that suggests a different malfunction than last week's battery fire in a 787 at Boston's Logan International Airport. While there was no fire in the most recent incident, one of the Times sources said, quote, "It's still a problem. There was significant overheating," end quote. And reports are beginning to appear that Boeing was warned about battery safety as early as 2006. Aviation reporter and blogger Ben Sandilands writes in Plane Talking that Michael Leon, while employed at Securaplane, who provided battery assemblies for the 787, wrote a report warning that the battery technology planned for the 787 was a flight of safety issue and urged the use of an alternate technology. Securaplane attempted to force Leon out of the company when he later refused to deliver a battery pack to Boeing, a battery pack that later malfunctioned. The 787's batteries are made by GS Yuasa of Japan, and its manufacturing process is almost certainly going to become part of this investigation. J. Phil McCoy, president and CEO of Lightsport America, announced on Thursday at the Lightsport Expo in Sebring, Florida, that his firm has purchased the assets of Italian aircraft manufacturer ATR Storm Aircraft, and he expects complete relocation of the factory and to begin U.S. production of Storm's complete line of Lightsport aircraft at the Bartow, Florida Municipal Airport in March. Lightsport America will offer four Storm models, the all-composite Storm Rally, Rally Amphibious, the all-metal Century with tricycle gear, and the Century Conventional with a tailwheel. Both the Rally and Century models are priced from $99,000 to $117,000, depending on options in avionics. In addition to the Rally and Century models, LSA will also offer several Storm kits, including the Fury RG, and 400. In other news out of the USSAE in Sebring, Samson Motors has received full funding for the launch of the Switchblade multi-mode vehicle, the company has announced. With testing milestones accomplished in both ground and air modes, the Switchblade now moves into construction and testing of the conforming full-scale prototype. The Switchblade is driven from home to a nearby airfield where the wings swing out, the tail moves back, and the vehicle can then be flown to the final destination. Studies have shown that point-to-point transportation is the most efficient form, even compared to mass transit. The problem has been accomplishing a successful integration of two very different modes of transportation. Samson Motors hopes its Switchblade, a sort of hybrid flying car, will accomplish that. Samson's CEO, Sam Boosfield, said, quote, "When I look at the future, I see transportation shifting to the air. That is, I believe, an almost universal concept, that sometime in the future we will have flying cars. Well, the future is now," end quote. The Federal Communications Commission is reopening the rulemaking and is seeking additional comments on the proper timing and implementation of a phase-out of 121.5 megahertz ELTs and a transition to 406 megahertz ELTs. The FCC considered this move earlier, in part because of the International COSPAS SARSAT satellite system, which relays distress alerts to search and rescue authorities, stopped monitoring frequency 121.5 back on February 1st of 2009. However, on January 10th, 2011, the FCC formally stayed its rule on the prohibition of the certification, manufacture, importation, sale, or use of ELTs that transmit distress alerts on 121.5, in part then because the FAA stated that 121.5 MHz ELTs could continue to provide beneficial means of locating missing aircraft even without satellite monitoring, because the frequency is still monitored by the search and rescue community, including the Civil Air Patrol. The FAA also expressed concerns about the cost and availability of replacements for the 121.5 MHz ELTs. Well, the FCC continues to believe that a phase-out of 121.5 ELTs is in the best public interest. While nothing in the record disputes the conclusion that 406 ELTs are superior to the 121.5 MHz ELTs, or that a transition to 406 MHz ELTs would promote aviation safety, the FCC seeks further comment on these tentative conclusions. It also seeks additional comments to help the industry move more closely to consider the timing and implementation of any such transition. When AeroNews continues, Pinnacle prepares to emerge from bankruptcy. How would you deflect or destroy an onrushing, earth-crushing asteroid? And Star Trekking on the International Space Station.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Aero News continues now for Friday, January the 18th. I'm Glenn Moyer. Pinnacle Airlines announced Wednesday that the comprehensive agreements it reached with Delta, the Airline Pilots Association International, and the Official Committee of Unsecured Creditors in Pinnacle's Chapter 11 case have been approved by the bankruptcy court. The agreements together provide a path for the company to emerge from bankruptcy with a competitive cost structure and a viable long-term business plan. Under Pinnacle's new business plan, the company will transition to operating a fleet of 81 fuel-efficient two-class regional jets for Delta. John Spaniers, the president and CEO of Pinnacle Airlines, said, quote, "Pinnacle will be well-positioned to emerge from the bankruptcy process with a viable business plan that provides meaningful opportunities for all our employees," end quote. A space rock several hundred meters across is heading toward our planet, and the last-ditch attempt to avert a disaster, an untested mission to deflect it, fails. This fictional scene of films and novels could well be a reality one day, but what can space agencies do to ensure our efforts work next time? Well, ESA is seeking research ideas to help guide the development of a U.S.-European asteroid deflection mission now under study. Concepts are being sought for both ground and space-based investigations, seeking improved understanding of the physics of very high-speed collisions involving both man-made and natural objects in space. Four actors from television's Star Trek franchise recently carried on a conversation on Twitter with Canadian astronaut Colonel Chris Hadfield aboard the International Space Station, which included several references to both the original show and The Next Generation. Hadfield had obviously been a fan of the show as a kid, as many of us were and still are, so when William Shatner, who played Captain James Kirk on the original series, asked if he would be twittering from space, the astronaut replied, quote, "Yes, standard orbit, Captain, and we're detecting signs of life on the surface," end quote. The following day, Hadfield posted a picture of himself on Twitter wearing a red shirt. Now, red shirts were often worn by Star Trek's away team members, those who didn't make it back to the Enterprise. Actor George Takei, who played Helmsman Lieutenant Sulu, chimed in, posting about the conversation, which caused Hadfield to tweet, "All we need is the real Nimoy to beam in and we'd have an away team." Takei responded, quote, "I'm fine with beaming down with the away team as long as I don't have to wear the red shirt," end quote. And then finally, Mr. Spock joined the fun. Leonard Nimoy tweeted to Hadfield, quote, LLAP, end quote. That, of course, being shorthand for live long and prosper. Buzz Aldrin even got into the thread. He tweeted to Hadfield and Shatner, Neil and I would have tweeted from the moon if we could have, but I would prefer to tweet from Mars, maybe by 2040. At that point, the Twitter station jumped generations, with Will Wheaton, who played Wesley Crusher on Star Trek The Next Generation, tweeting to Hadfield, quote, if you get into trouble with nanites while you're in orbit, I know a guy who can help you contain them, and he has experience. Well, Hadfield switched to the Captain Jean-Luc Picard mode, tweeting, quote, Wesley, we've talked about you being on the bridge. I believe you're needed in engineering, end quote. All of this, of course, leading one to believe that perhaps in space, everyone can hear you laugh. I'm Glenn Moyer. You're now cleared for departure at warp speed.